Not too long ago, I was flying from Oklahoma City to Houston, Texas on the red eye, that very early morning flight which departs well before dawn. I departed from Will Rogers World Airport in Oklahoma City in a rather severe thunderstorm. Now, if you've ever flown during a storm, you know how bumpy the ride is as the plane ascends through the clouds, and the relief you feel when the plane finally emerges into the smooth air above the storm. It was still pretty dark, and I'll admit to being a little disappointed as we broke through the clouds. I was hoping to see countless stars lighting the heavens, and instead, I saw only a handful of stars because the first rays of dawn were beginning to emerge in the east. Now, there was no discernible light, just enough hint of the light to come to obliterate the view of all but the brightest stars. Oh well, I thought, I get to see the sunrise from an unusual perspective. I put down my copy of the morning newspaper, requested coffee from the flight attendant, and happily sat in my window seat, waiting to be amazed at the glory of it all. If you've flown very often, you know how remarkable the clouds look from above as the sun shines down on them. The disappointment of being unable to spot landmarks, you know, the rivers and lakes and cities you try to identify, usually unsuccessfully, from the air, is more than offset by the incredible sight of the sunlight atop the clouds. And so I waited. The flight took about an hour, and I seldom took my eyes off the east. More and more light slowly eked into the eastern sky, and the tops of the clouds set off against the horizon began to take shape. Ever so slowly, the tops of the clouds were revealed. Now the sun was still hidden from view. As the light appeared, the shadows from the clouds began to cast shadows on each other, and they made this incredible sight. I can't describe what I saw, and I can't describe what I felt. There's no Salvador Dali painting that could capture the surreal impossibility of the sight. There's no imagery of cotton candy or changing faces, mystical ships, or heavenly majestic warriors on a cosmic chessboard that can come near describing this sight. I kept thinking that if a person painted this view perfectly, nobody would believe it hadn't come from the imagination of some brilliant artist. And then, of course, I realized it had done just that. It was an imaginative, artistic creation of such splendor, such unspeakable beauty, that it could only have been created by the supreme artist of all creation. But it wasn't a dream, it was real. It was happening. And I was absolutely transfixed. The sight was so magnificent, so splendorous, that I was subconsciously assuming everybody on the plane was staring in awe at the eastern sky. This is one of those moments I will carry in my memory throughout my life. I turned to the person sitting next to me, almost afraid to look away from the east, knowing I was witnessing something special, something unspeakable, something sacred. And the person next to me was reading the newspaper. I thought this was the equivalent of winning a trip to the moon on the next generation of space shuttles and then ingesting enough sleeping pills to stay thoroughly unconscious through the entire trip. But then I noticed the people across the aisle from me. One was asleep, one was reading a book, and another was quietly working the keys of her laptop computer. I started to look about the plane, and guess what? I was the only one watching the sunrise. I wanted to jump out of my seat and scream, "Are you all crazy? Don't you see what's happening here? God has done it again." But I didn't. I just looked back to the east, and it occurred to me, this was all for me. This glorious sight was created so I could gaze in wondrous awe at the glory of God. Now, don't get me wrong, this sight was available to anybody who wanted to take the time to look, but nobody else wanted to take the time, just me. One of the most incredible events in the history of the universe, unfolded right there before my eyes, and my eyes were the only eyes to see it. That made me start thinking, how often does God perform some creative act of inconceivable beauty and nobody notices? Now, I'm not talking about some miracle of creation being performed in some far corner of the universe, in some galaxy so far away our minds simply can't comprehend the distance. I'm talking about right here in front of our eyes every day. How often does God perform unnoticed miracles of incomprehensible beauty? I believe it happens constantly. The problem is this: we're afraid of being awestruck. We are afraid to be alone with God for even one moment, because as we notice the remarkable beauty all around us, we might have to deal with the fact of our being. We might have to think about being alive. We might question whether the way we are living our lives, given the limited amount of time we have to share on this planet, is the way we should be living our lives. We've taught ourselves to keep our senses occupied at all times. If we have an extra 10 seconds, grab something to read, a paper, a magazine, the label on a can of soup, it doesn't matter. If we walk into the house and there's nobody home, quick, turn on the television, turn on the radio, do something. In this 20th century Western world, we have developed an unwritten rule: bombard your senses with data at all times. This keeps us from having to think about our lives and the meaning of our lives. It keeps us from having to grapple with those big issues, the scary issues: pain, hunger, death. Unfortunately, this constant input of sensory data also keeps us from enjoying the other big issues: life, love, beauty, joy. Socrates said, "The unexamined life is not worth living." Perhaps we should listen to Socrates, because the unexamined life, the life of running from the truth with constant sensory input, is a life that misses the miracles that happen around us all the time. As an example, I suggest God performs one of these miracles every day at dawn. Now, I admit, one is seldom in the position of viewing the magical perspective that I had that morning from my window seat in the 737. The thunderstorm, the rotation of the earth, the brilliance of the engineering department at Boeing, they all team together to afford me a rare view of nature's splendor. But dawn is magnificent from any angle. I think of that beautiful song, "On Eagle's Wings," and that remarkable phrase, "the breath of dawn," which is in its chorus. The breath of dawn. Isn't it amazing how simple poetry can come closer to describing God's glory than any amount of philosophical inquiry and rational, deductive reasoning? You can take the five arguments of St. Thomas Aquinas, in which he purports to prove the existence of God, and toss them all in the trash. I say God is more evident in the phrase "the breath of dawn" than in any theological argument. And if you want to see God, to actually look at God in all God's glory, I suggest you find a nice spot away from the hustle and bustle of the city and watch the sunrise. Now, if you're like me, and like most people raised and educated in the 20th century Western world, let me describe the thought pattern that is likely to occur as you watch the sun peek over the horizon. Because it happens so slowly, it can be well over an hour from the time the eastern sky begins to lighten until the sun appears. Your first thought will likely be how very slowly the earth is rotating. This will take you back to younger days in grammar school, when Mrs. Smith used an apple and an orange to show how the earth spins and how the sun sits still as the earth revolves around the sun. She probably said something about Galileo. You might remember a few years later that Mrs. Smith told you what Mrs. Smith told you wasn't the whole story. In junior high, Mr. Williams explained that the earth wasn't actually traveling around the sun in a circle, it was an ellipse. And when Kepler figured this out, it just solved all sorts of problems in astronomy. Before Kepler, nobody could figure out why the stars seemed to move predictably through the sky and the planets seemed to wind about in no predictable fashion. It turns out the planets are all moving in ellipses, ovals, around the sun, which is sitting still. Well, not really. Mr. Jones told you in your high school physics class that the sun is actually hurtling through space at an incredible rate of speed. It just seems to be sitting still because the earth is moving along with it. He said something about Einstein and proceeded to return to the subject of levers and fulcrums. It made a lot more sense and it was much easier to envision. The bottom line of all this, however, is this. When you see how slowly the sun is rising, you will believe you understand what is happening. It's all like some big machine, isn't it? Wind it up, and away it goes. Day after day, year after year, millennium after millennium, the gears of the universe keep on turning, and we've figured out how the machinery works. If you yourself don't understand it, we are told, don't worry, there's no mystery here. Humankind has figured it all out. There's a good chance that as you go through this thought process, brought on by the slowness of the sun's ascent toward the horizon, you'll start thinking about the sun itself. Okay, what do we have here? Let's see. The sun's this big ball of burning gas, right? That's the main thing to remember. You found out in your early teens that the sun is actually a star. It seems big because we're so close to it. And you later learned that it's actually 93 million miles away. Oh, and it's a nuclear fusion reaction. There's really no mystery to it. Humankind could probably make a sun if we had enough time, enough space, and enough gas. And by this time, you may finally see the sun peeking over the horizon. Finally, dawn. You may even see the light coming through a few layers of clouds, giving that heavenly look, you know, when the light is refracted through the clouds and forms those visible beams. You almost expect to see a vision of Christ there in the sky, or at least, having seen so many biblical movies from the glamour days of Hollywood, you're expecting to hear the voice of God, who sounds a lot like Charlton Heston, to come sounding from the sky. Okay, let's see. Clouds, no problem there. Water vapor condensing in the atmosphere, big deal. And light, there's certainly no mystery to light. Visible light, what was it Mr. Jones said in that physics class? It's electromagnetic radiation ranging in wavelength from 4,000 to 7,700 angstrom units and traveling at 186,000 miles per second. Oh, all because of that fusion reaction going on in the sun. Well, so much for dawn. By this time, you'll need to get to work or whatever it is you do in the early hours of the day. And guess what? You just missed something wonderful. You just missed something awe-inspiring, but it wasn't your fault. You're a victim of the society you live in. You're a victim of the programming you've received throughout your life. You are never to be mystified. You're to understand everything. You are to analyze, scrutinize, dissect, and disassemble everything you find until you have a full knowledge of how it works. Now, this isn't all bad. This is how we learn. It's how we cure diseases. It's how we build bridges. It's how we explore our world. And it's how we use our minds for the benefit of humankind. But the problem is this. In becoming such analytical creatures, we've lost our sense of the sacred, of the divine, of the mysterious. Let's go back to that sunrise we talked about and look at it one more time. Why is it so beautiful? if we don't see the beauty, the problem's in us, not in the sunrise. Why is it so beautiful? It didn't have to be beautiful. If this reality we share was nothing more than a cold, barren, spiritless existence, could life somehow still exist? Maybe. Maybe. Would there still be billions of galaxies with billions of stars? Maybe. Would rational beings be able to study the workings of the universe? Maybe. But it wouldn't be beautiful. It wouldn't strike awe into the very core of our being, because that beauty, that awe, that wonder, that mystifying sense of the sacred, that is all the proof we need to know that God is here among us. God is here among us, and He is using our eyes to see the beauty of God's own creation. Don't lose sight of that image. You know, there's a school of philosophy which is not, by the way, in conflict with the leading edge of scientific inquiry, quantum physics, that holds the universe uses consciousness to bring itself into being. Or to answer the old question, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it fall, did it make a sound? Not only does it not make a sound, it appears to be a fact that if nobody heard it or saw it fall, it didn't happen. The world doesn't happen until somebody perceives it to happen. And that's why I say God is using our eyes to see the beauty of creation. We aren't onlookers in this world. We are integral parts of God's glory. We're necessary elements in God's design. We are holy, sacred parts of creation. And God is calling us into a relationship with God and a relationship with each other. When Jesus Christ said, "What you have done for the least of my brothers, you have done for me," He meant it. When we serve other people, we serve God. I can imagine no other way to serve God. There's nowhere we can go to hide from God's love. God is there in the dawn. God is there in the night. God is there in the stars. But the surest place to find God is in the eyes of the person sitting beside you this morning. And the surest way to serve God is to love those people with whom God gave us to share this world. Think about this. There's no place you can go where you can hide from God's love. There's nothing you can do to lose God's love. There's nothing you can say to make God take away God's love. And at any moment in your life, you can speak with and be heard by the Creator and Sustainer of the universe. Amazing. Albert Einstein said, "The most important question in the world is this: is the universe a friendly place or not?" Well, I'm certainly no Einstein, but I can answer his question. Yes, Einstein. Yes, it is. The universe is a friendly place. If it weren't a friendly place, there would be no such thing as love. If it weren't a friendly place, there would be no place like University Congregational Church. And if it weren't a friendly place, dawn would just be the radiated light waves from a nuclear fusion reaction 93 million miles away. Thank God for beauty. Thank God for love. Thank God for the breath of dawn. Amen.